Harry, what'd you have for breakfast today?
You know, I'm doing this intermittent fasting thing where I don't eat before noon, and so I had nothing.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had a poke bowl.
Oh, so. I love those. Have you ever had one in Hawaii?
Well, I had the Hawaiian poke bowl, but I had it on 55th Street.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome to Soundboard, the Steinway & Sons podcast on artistry and craftsmanship. I'm your producer and host, Ben Finan, editor-in-chief at Steinway & Sons, and for the online music magazine, listenmusicculture.com. My guest today is Steinway artist Harry Connick Jr., who just released the album True Love, a celebration of Cole Porter on Verve Records. Connick wrote and then orchestrated his own arrangements, conducted the orchestra, played piano, and sang the songs. His Broadway show, Harry Connick Jr., A Celebration of Cole Porter, runs in December at the Nederlander Theater. Connick spoke to me at the offices of Universal Music Group in New York City.
Hi, Harry.
Hi.
Thanks for talking to me today.
Thanks, Ben.
I interviewed a fellow Steinway artist, Robert Glasper. And before the interview, he played me a cover of Radiohead's Everything in Its Right Place. And I asked him at the time,
Robert, how did Radiohead become the new Cole Porter songbook?
I know, right?
And I'd like to ask the same question.
It leads me to say that Cole Porter is also the new Cole Porter songbook, as you have demonstrated with this new release. What is it that makes Cole Porter so eternally relevant?
I think it's lots of things, and it's a really great question, and the way you put that is really interesting. Because of the craftsmanship that he used to write these songs, not only will they last forever, but they're perfect for interpretation. I use the analogy with architecture all the time. It's like a house that was built in the 1800s that may need a fresh coat of paint, maybe some new furniture, new roof, things like that. The guts of the house and the house itself, the architecture of the house, are basically timeless.
I love Paris in the springtime. I love Paris in the fall. I love Paris in the winter when it drizzles. I love Paris in the summer when it sizzles.
And that's what Cole Porter's music is. I mean, you can break it down basically into three segments, four, I guess. But the first three would be lyrics, melody, and harmony. And then you could think of them in their entirety as sort of standalone songs that work in the context of a show and then can stand alone to be interpreted in any way that you want. And in each of those categories, he is unorthodox, he is challenging, sometimes he seems to be even overly simplistic, sometimes he's overly witty, I mean, and everything in between. And so it's this candy shop for somebody like me who approaches these songs in different ways, not only as a singer and a piano player, but you know, as an arranger and orchestrator. There's almost limitless possibilities to deconstruct this art, and it never loses its integrity because it's so structurally sound.
Okay, deconstruct this art. That's interesting. And you talked about the orchestrations, which are really fresh.
Thank you.
And they're dark and they're ruddy. And it's not the brassiness that we've come to expect from the classic interpretations. There's lots of woodwinds, there's lots of strings, it's blue and purple. If I were a classical dork, which I am, I would say it's Mozartian. When you revisited these songs, what were you trying to bring in terms of a musical aesthetic when you were laying down these orchestrations?
Well, the through theme is already there, so I didn't have to worry about sort of a thematic theme throughout the recording because they were all songs by Cole Porter. So that's something I didn't have to think about. So after I picked the songs, and there were various ways I picked them, I kind of flipped through the song book and said, oh, yeah, I forgot about this song or that song. And some songs that I had was not familiar with. It was one that didn't make the record called I Am Loved. There's another one called Mind If I Make Love to You, which is on the record that I had heard in the movie High Society, but it wasn't like a huge hit like I've Got You Under My Skin. So I just picked tunes that I liked. And then the real fun part comes where you take these vastly broad strokes. You know, what key is it going to be in? That determines a lot of things. What's the tempo? What's the groove?
Is it? Why does the key determine a lot of things?
Because, you know, if I'm, as the singer, you know, if I sing something, I mean, this is super basic, but if I'm singing something in a low key, it's going to feel a certain way. If I sing something in a high key, which sort of pushes my range, it's going to, that's why when I did In the Still of the Night, I wrote it just a little bit higher than was comfortable because, can we just use that song as an example?
Please. Very expansive arrangement of In the Still of the Night. You really draw it out.
It's an amazing piece of music because I'll start in the middle and work back. So in for your listeners who may not know, the shout chorus in a big band song is basically the development section in a sonata allegro form. It's where you develop the theme. And I got to that point in the song and I was thinking about the lyrics and it's called In the Still of the Night. And I did the antithesis of what the still of the night is on the surface, which is it's this obnoxiously high brass section and everything swinging. There's a lot of drum fills. And to me, when you look at the lyrics, he says, in the still of the night, all the world is in slumber. In the still of the night, as I gaze from my window at the moon in its flight, my thoughts all stray to you. So now we know the feeling of lying in bed alone, thinking about this person that we're infatuated with and that feeling. In the still of the night, all the world is in slumber. All the times without number, darling, that I say to you. So now he's saying something in his mind. Do you love me as I love you? Are you my life to be my dream come true? Or will this dream of mine fade out of sight like the moon growing dim on the rim of the hill in the chill still of the night? So that's an unorthodox. He carries the information from the bridge to the last section of the song, which is just weird.
And pushes that caesura further and further into the distance.
Right. So when I got to the shout chorus, I'm going insane as a man lying in bed thinking about this person. I can't sleep. I feel like it's the longest night ever. And that's where that comes from. And that's why in my mind it works and why nobody really questions, wait, this song is called In the Still of the Night. What are you doing? Mm-hmm. Because of the groundwork that he already laid. So the tempo is slow, the harmonies are not dissonant I hate to use that word. They're not super inside, like basic chords, but they're harmonically stretched enough to know that hopefully something is coming that's not quite pleasant. Because it's really not a pleasant feeling not knowing what this person thinks about you. So, you know, you're looking at a blank manuscript paper. And I think the first thing that came to me was do-de-de-de-do-de-de-de-de-de. And it was just whatever. So you write the melody line down, then you say, well, is that going to be saxophones? It's going to be trombones, trumpets, going to be all of them. It's going to be strings. So it turned out to be trombones. And then the saxophones answer that. Is it going to be unison? Is it going to be five-part harmony? Is it going to be split up some kind of way, so I decided. So that's going to be this ascending and descending phrase, and it's going to echo that, and then you just start. It starts to build on itself, and then you automatically, within 10 seconds, you've created boundaries for yourself. So now I've created a motif, which I have to stretch out through the rest of the orchestration, and I have to stick to it if it's going to have any integrity like the song does. Right. So that's where the fun comes in, because you can't, I always tell my kids, give yourself something to edit. You know, you might have all these creative feelings, but until you put the pen on the paper or your hand on the string of the violin,
It
doesn't exist. You can't improve something that doesn't exist. So that's exciting to me, because then your brain starts flying faster than you can write. So you start, oh, wait, I have an idea for the bridge or for the shout chorus or for the outro. And then you start going back and filling in those blanks. And then when you start seeing the thing as a whole, then you can really start refining the harmonies and really getting intricate with strings and ornaments. And it's really a joyous, unbelievably intense, but joyous experience.
In the still of the night, as I gaze from my window at the moon in its flight, my thoughts all stray to you. In the still of the night, all the world is in slumber, all the times without number, darling, when I say to you, do you love me as I love you?
Let's stay with that process. Would you lead the band from the keyboard during the recording?
That's a great question. So because of certain physical limitations that we had, I could have played with the band, but I couldn't have conducted them.
Yes, too many hands.
Too many hands. So in my dreams, I would love to have somebody conduct the band, and then I could play and sing at the piano. But if playing and singing at the piano in the same room, you have a lot of problems in post-production. Because if you have an orchestra that's playing into the lid of the piano,
You get bleed.
You can't mix it as well. So the next choice would be to have somebody conduct and play the piano and sing it. But I can't conduct and play the piano at the same time. So you have all of these decisions that you have to make. So the easiest way was to conduct the band, sing it, and then I like to accompany myself after I've sung it. I don't like to.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So I would sing it and then I would comp to myself. And okay. Then because of the lots of scheduling reasons, we had to do the strings the next day.
Okay.
So we did the big band in one studio and then we went down the street to Capitol and did the string. So it's, okay. But the vocals and the piano were done in 3 hours. You just go in, turn the mic on. I just sang them alphabetically twice a piece and then play piano. Those are all, one take, basically playing what I'm singing at the time.
I would never have thought that the piano comes after the vocal. I would have thought that that would have had to have been simultaneous.
It would drive me crazy.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because it would be presumptuous on my part to assume how I'm going to phrase something. So since the lyrics are so lyric driven, which sounds counterintuitive or weird.
But with Cole Porter.
Yeah. So you don't know how you're going to be singing these lyrics. So if I'm playing something on the piano before I hear the way I sing it, it's kind of disrespectful to the singer.
Right.
It's
like, then you can't
you're not
support.
Accompanying. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
But if you had to do the band and the strings first, are you then limited from your vocal spontaneity, or is that just something you had to plan out as you were doing?
Well, no, you separate it. This sounds completely unrealistic, but when I say, okay, roll the tape, and I hear the orchestra, it's almost like I've never heard it before. I know that sounds crazy.
Now
I can really focus on, when I say, in the still of the night, as I gaze from my window, I'm not thinking about what the viola player is playing.
Right,
I'm really, really not. I'm able to sort of compartmentalize that and really jump in to that, which is, I don't know how I'm able to do that, but it works well for me.
Yeah, you're able to be in the moment.
You have to be in all of
whichever
those
job.
Yeah, because as a conductor, you have to be. There's so many nuances that you have to be aware of. The musicians are limitless in their potential, but unless they have somebody conducting them that guides them as an ensemble through it, you're not going to make music. So you have to dig deep in those recording sessions.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking, but now God knows anything goes. good authors too, who once knew better words, now only use for letter words. Writing prose, anything goes. The world has gone mad today, and good's bad today, and black's white today, and day's night today. Well, most guys today, their lemon fries today are just silly gigolos. And though I'm not a great romancer, I know that I'm bound to answer when you propose. Anything goes.
Anything Goes, which opens the album. I love how sparse the harmony is.
Oh, that's cool.
We're really, you're leaving some indecision and some space there.
Right.
Right? And you're also playing with that vocal line because you're not tied to these changes.
That's right, that's right.
Talk to me a little bit about that orchestration.
Well, thanks for noticing. You can't improvise unless you thoroughly understand the harmonic structure of the song. So what's really important to me is to go back and figure out exactly what Cole Porter wanted. And then you can break it down and reharmonize or do whatever you want. And like my bass player, Neil Kane, you know, who's an absolute genius on this record, knows that I'm listening to every single note he plays. And most of this music is triad based. So Cole Porter was, I mean, he was so great at common tones and putting these appoggiatures in the melody that lasted just too long to make you uncomfortable and resolve them.
It's Bach-like.
It's very much, man. Yeah. And when Neil is playing these bass lines, I mean, I'm on him like a hawk to, I don't have to say anything, but I'm listening to him because there's so much information there. So there is a lot of space in the orchestration. But there isn't at the same time, which is kind of what you alluded to, that I'm playing with it. But if you think about, like, I didn't sing the verse on this song, but check this out. Times have changed, and we've often rewound the clock. Do you know what the next line is? Do you happen to remember what the verse is? Since the Puritans got the shock when they landed on Plymouth Rock. In your recollection, who landed on Plymouth Rock? It was the Pilgrims.
Yeah.
It wasn't the Puritans.
Oh, he switched it up.
Why? So what I think he's saying is, all pilgrims are Puritans, but not all Puritans were pilgrims.
It's a square and rectangle
right,
situation.
Right, but why does he do that? Like why he's writing the song? He has rhythmic control. It's not like he needed to fit it into syllables. He could have said since the Pilgrims got the shock, but he didn't. He said Puritans, so automatically we see anything goes. Like this is going to be the way it is. And then
he's sending us a signal that I'm messing with you in the text.
On 16 different levels. Yeah, yeah, he does this all the time. Yeah. He does it all the time, you know, with his lyrics, you know, and he's talking about, you know, his grandmother who's 80 years old, who's hanging out in these
with the
clubs.
Gigolos.
Well, yeah, with the nudist parties. Yeah. And how about this line? He says, think of the shocks you got, from the knocks you got, from the blues you got, from the news you got, and the pains you got. If any brains you got from those little radios. And I think what he's saying is, listen to the news. It hurts.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it's killing us.
It's killing us. And I mean, this is 2019 and nothing has changed.
Yeah.
He has a way of just getting to the core of what we're feeling, but presenting it in a way that can be interpreted in different ways. And that's where the arrangement comes from.
Okay.
So it's like there's a, you know what a tritone is.
Yep.
So it, when they go, bo bo dee dee. Dee, dee, doo, dee. So we're in G flat, and then it goes to a C chord, G flat to a C chord. So that's not a normal introduction. So that's my way of saying anything goes.
We're out here.
We're out. I mean, to a point. I mean, I'm not like taking it totally free. Where you know,
it's
but
not a 12 tone.
That's right.
Got you.
Actually, it's not far from a 12. I think because we modulate like six times.
Okay. So you might get there.
We definitely got there.
Distant modulations.
That's right.
Reminds us that, you know, good authors too.
That's right.
Once knew better words.
They now only use four-letter words writing prose.
There you go. Anything
there was a goes. Great line in the British version of Anything Goes that Cole Porter didn't write but approved that says, when senators and legislators start calling each other traitors and so-and-sos, anything goes. No, when the House and legislators start calling each other traitors and so-and-so.
Fairly prescient.
It's amazing, right?
Given today's climate.
That's right.
We have to talk about the instrumental that you did for
Begin to Begin. Yeah.
That shocked me.
I'm so happy.
I'm like, okay, when's he coming in, right? And you didn't. It's such a nice journey.
Thank you.
So talk to me about
how specific are we getting with this?
As specific as you want.
Really?
Yeah, you can go crazy. It's all okay. Right. We're not going to put anybody off.
So for these Steinway folks and for any musicians that are listening right now, this was really, really hard to play. And I'll tell you why. It's basically a simple cha-cha rhythm.
Right.
But my left hand, which plays this descending and ascending.
Hold on, I have to interrupt you. Is this one take or are they layered?
Oh my God, no. That's one take. Yeah.
Wow. So there's no overdubs.
Oh, no.
Oh my goodness.
By the way, there's no auto tunes, edits, none of that stuff.
Sure, but it sounds like you have three hands.
That's good.
Okay,
that's good.
Go on.
No, I really appreciate that. If your listeners could see, I'm smiling ear to ear because nobody ever talks about this stuff. So what I did was, it's a very simple chromatic C, B, B flat, and then back up B to C. So that's my pinky and my left hand is going ding, 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 ding. So on the if it comes on the and of four, one, two, three, four, and one, two, three, and two, two, three, and three, two, three, and four, two, three, and one, two, three, and two, two, three. Right. So no, you were singing on the, it comes in one, two, three, four, and one, two, three, and one, two, three, and ding, ding, ding. Right. So there's that. So that time has to stay like a rock and be on a happy head the whole time.
Okay.
The right hand, it was really important. The whole thing is about grace notes. So instead of going dun 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 ding, it was plum 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 pling 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 pling. It was the idea of this South American begin thing, and the lyrics are all about when they begin the begin. I think about this romantic thing, and as the song goes on, it's like, please don't play that song again. It makes me hurt in my heart. So what happens in my right hand is I didn't want there to be any semblance of tempo or time. So my left hand is keeping the time. My right hand's playing out of time until I get to this triplet phrase in the end when it goes do dee 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 dee. I took the triplets and phrased them in four. So it's one, two, three, do do dee 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 dee, like that. So when you have the left hand in the, we call that a hemiola in the music business, I believe, which I thought might have been a blood condition till I realized I was playing one myself.
Hey-o.
I love Al Hemiola. He's a wonderful guitarist. Kid, I used to record myself on my Walkman reading the newspaper while I played, because if I could, I would, you know, today's news, you know, President Carter, there's a gas crisis, whatever I'm reading, and if the tempo could stay the same while I was reading out of time, I knew that I had the separation that I needed. So you go back and listen to.
This is advanced pat your head, rub your belly.
Yeah, well, it is situation. Because you need to have the time needs to be there whether you're playing it or not. So I would listen to these recordings back, and if my piano playing wasn't exactly on and my reading the paper was on, I knew I had to practice. Or sometimes I'd hear myself reading the paper like, in today's news we have this, because I was thinking about my piano playing. So I had to get it to a point where both of them could operate completely independently. And it wasn't until that point that I started experimenting with how does that manifest itself in this piano thing.
You're sensational.
Thank you so much. So fun. Never ever get to do this. We should do this every day.
'Cause you're sensational. Sensational. That's all.
to Soundboard, the Steinway & Sons podcast on artistry and craftsmanship. We heard clips from I Love Paris, In the Still of the Night, Anything Goes, Begin the Begin, and You're Sensational. All from Harry Connick Jr.'s album, True Love, a celebration of Cole Porter on Verve. Our intro music is Philip Glass's Mad Rush, performed on a Steinway Model M by me, Ben Finan, editor-in-chief at listenmusicculture.com. Thank you for listening.
And if you say that one fine day you'll let me come to call, we'll have a ball, 'cause you're sensational. Girl, you're just sensational. You're sensational, sensational. That's